Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so to get into some fantasy football failures, we do this every Tuesday. Just who absolutely just ruined your fantasy football weekend? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Who sucked this weekend in fantasy football? I'll start. Jameis Winston, how about coming off of 5 touchdowns? Okay, you know, it looked a little fluky. He only threw, like, what, 20 times for those 5 touchdowns, less than 150 yards. But still, a lot of people, hey, Jameis Winston, he's gonna do something similar again. Couple of touchdowns through the air. Maybe he runs for one more. He was a dud on Sunday for the Saints.
I mean, how much time you got? I mean, if you want to continue at the quarterback position, you could go Zach Wilson. You could go Matt Ryan.
I mean, you're not playing Ezekiel Elliott. You're not
although
playing
he was
Zach
okay.
Wilson. Ezekiel Elliott had his best game of the year.
Right, and you know what? And he was outplayed by the guy that's supposed to be playing behind him.
Yeah, which, by the way, waiver wire pickups, a couple of them we're going to go through here in a second. I doubt Tony Pollard's available in your league, but there are some out there where he is available. I'd be willing to use up my entire fab for Tony Pollard because he does look better than Zeke. My question, though, whenever you look at Zeke and Tony Pollard and, like, when you look at it from a fantasy football perspective, how many touches is likely for Tony Pollard week in, week out?
I think the more he plays like he's playing, I think the more likely they're going to be enticed to do running back by committee regardless of what the bottom line salaries say and play the hot hand because they need a running game and he's been effective. And the fact that each guy can, you know, and you look at a lot of the way new NFL teams are playing, one running back isn't enough anymore. And having one main guy sets you up for failure because of injury and because there's going to be times because of style that it doesn't fit what the offense is trying to do. So you're going with two- and three-headed monsters. Look at the Texans if you want to look at a bad example, but a team that's, you know, going by running back by committee. But, you know, Green Bay's done it for years. They had Williams, who's with the Lions now, last year with the Thunder and Lightning. They replaced Williams with A.J. Dillon to go with Aaron Jones. You look across the league and you keep doing it. Look at how many the Buccaneers have, where the Buccaneers could go with Jones. If they don't want to go with Jones, they can go to Leonard Fournette. If they want to go with someone out of the backfield, they can go with Gio Bernard. So the successful teams, the teams that are going to be there at the end, are going to be teams that have depth at every position. Look at the Cleveland Browns. And tell me that that isn't a system that works because of the guys they have toting the rock.
It's great from like it from an offensive coordinator's point of view and winning games point of view. It's frustrating, though, from a fantasy football owner and the guy's not getting like 100% of the carries. It's what makes Christian McCaffrey so valuable is he touches the rock so many times per game. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Fantasy football failures over the weekend. John says any running back coming back from an injury, coming back slow, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley. Frustrating because Cook was like the second overall pick behind Christian McCaffrey, whereas, you know, you get a guy like you deleted it, so I lost it.
Saquon Barkley,
where he was a second rounder. And he's, I mean, I don't know. I didn't have much exposure to Saquon Barkley at all.
But don't you also get into the whole dilemma of we talk about how long it takes to come back from a knee. And even though you're going to be playing, you won't be playing at the level you were playing pre-injury for most cases. So, therefore, it's a tough high pick to spend in any fantasy league, regardless of your scoring system. It's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Big Ben is another one for me. I saw a lot of people liking Big Ben from a DFS standpoint. They thought he was going to take advantage of the Raiders' defense. That backfired, and now he's dealing with like a messed up pec. I think Big Ben is done. I think Big Ben's days of like actually being a fantasy football option are long gone and absolutely done for. And I honestly have problems. I honestly have fears with the Steelers. Like I thought that I was high on the Steelers preseason. Like I was saying, pound the over. Big Ben. I'm already.
How about
regretting
the running game
one.
Or lack thereof? Najee Harris was supposed to be the answer. They burned a first round pick on a running back, which you know the formula says now, unless it's a top five pick, don't do it. And even in the case of Saquon Barkley, you know injuries do happen. So they took what they thought was the logical pick to help them even more offensively. And so far, it hasn't panned out for them. So there's a lot of issues when you start thinking about that. But there's also a reason why you should have two running backs on your roster you trust. Just like I got done talking about with the other teams, the Steelers don't have that on their roster.
No, I would say that going back to the Pollard, Ezekiel Elliott, like in terms of split, I think Booger McFarland said that Tony Pollard's a better running back than Ezekiel Elliott is right now, which thanks for listening to the Killer Bees because we said that yesterday as well. I still think it's going to be 50-50 because when you have the big money guy, you still got to play him. You still got to use him. And I think it's going to be about a 50-50 split there in Dallas, which isn't great for either one in terms of a fantasy football.
The one thing he's got going for him is he's got Jerry Jones. And Jerry Jones's ego is going to say, because he doesn't want to look bad, he's going to give Zeke every chance to succeed because otherwise he's got to answer the questions of why did you give him a deal that no one said you should give him when he was holding out and he decided to play chicken and he won. It goes back to the conversation we were having earlier today, sport by sport. It's how you handle the disgruntled player that will dictate a lot in terms of the success of your teams and league. And if you set a bad precedent and everybody else is facing that fact too, it can be a real financial situation.
Yeah. Here's a couple of waiver wire pickups and 713-780-ESPN asking if Cordarrelle Patterson's worth the pickup. I don't think so. I think there's better running backs out there. Tony Pollard's one of them. I don't think he's available in many leagues. How about Rondale Moore? The week that he had with Arizona, is that something he can sustain? I'm not so sure. But Arizona throws the ball a lot. Like, one of my big disappointments this weekend, too, is Arizona running backs. Like, I want nothing to do with Arizona running backs, whether it's Kenyon Drake or whether it's James Conner, or Edmonds, rather. Edmonds or Conner, I want no part of. Michael Pittman, another one for the Colts. I mean, if they're going to throw the football a lot, problem is you don't know what you're getting with Carson Wentz.
Conner has looked good. But you know what?
Just not enough touches, though.
Right, but he won't get them. That's the thing from a fantasy perspective. Because offenses are inclined to go with multiple running backs now, it's hard to get a team to where you can pinpoint that's the guy. Look, we thought coming out of camp, Lindsey was going to be the guy for the Texans, and he's been anything but. He's been getting the third most carries and touches of all three running backs, and who would have predicted that coming out of camp? So it's tough, even if you're watching this team week in, week out with everything that they do, it's hard to pinpoint. Because sometimes, systematically, you're going to say, based on the front that you're facing and the defense that's coming at you, you know, we might need more quickness as opposed to the next week when you need a guy that's just going to pound it between the tackles. And so you have the thunder and lightning combination and you have multiple options. No one coaching in the NFL cares about your fantasy team. They care about wins and losses. And from week to week, the game plan changes and the guys executing the game plan change too.
They should be caring about the fantasy teams, though, of their fans. Don't. Tim Patrick and KJ Osborne, a couple of other guys to keep an eye on if you're looking for a receiver. You've had some injuries there. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go now to the HRP listener line. Jim, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Enjoy your show. And this may be a stupid question, but it's always been in the back of my mind. I'm kind of curious. For defensive stats when it comes to fantasy football and points, if a quarterback throws a pick six, that goes against the defensive stats, right? So if a defense puts up a shutout, but the quarterback throws a pick six, all of a sudden it's not a shutout. So you, in essence, lose points defensively, fantasy-wise. But the defense did not allow those points. Just kind of looking for inside explanation. Whatever you got.
Yeah, I think if you can mess with your league settings, though, and you can, it's usually what the defense is allowing. Usually you don't get credit for a pick six, something like that. If you have a good commissioner who knows how to handle their business, they should be able to take care of that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Manning cast was yesterday. Did you watch any of it? I was watching the Astros game volume up. I didn't watch Monday Night Football either broadcast. I watched that on mute because I had the Astros up. Here are some of the best, at least what they're saying were the best. Rob Gronkowski joining the Mannings and admitted something that a lot of people were surprised about.
Well, first off, my teammate Cam Brate just asked me the other day. He goes, "Rob, I have a serious question." He goes, "Do you ever watch film?" And I said, "No, I don't. I just run by guys. If I'm feeling good, I'm feeling good."
So that was Gronk saying he doesn't watch film.
Shocker.
It's not that big of a surprise. This is like one of those things to me too.
Brett Favre admitting he didn't know what the nickelback was in a defensive setting.
But that's
setting.
Also like lingo, though, right?
Right.
Like he probably knows the position. Like in terms of
or the
Gronk,
dime package.
I feel like skill guys, I think that they almost overdo it with film. Like,
you think Favre thought the dime package was a drug deal? I mean, you know what? I'm a Packer fan, and it wouldn't surprise me if you told me he had no clue about – three quarters of terminology and play calling.
No.
He just was the gunslinger all the way around. Gronkowski's a guy that's never going to strike you as graduating from Harvard
right.
and going to get his PhD.
But, like, on a serious note, like, I don't think that these skill position guys need to be watching tons of film. Like, you start thinking about it too much. Like Gronk just said, I just run by him, run over him. Like, sometimes it is that, you know, it's not simple. But whenever you're like that athletic and that big of a freak, yeah, you don't need to watch a whole lot of film. Run your slant, run your out,
but
go
you
do your thing.
Do. And it happened. Was it in week one against the Cowboys when they noticed that Gronk actually picked up on the blitz scheme that the defense was coming with? So he changed his route to go inside, so to give Brady an option as an escape route, and he used it, and it ended up turning into a touchdown. And they said that's, you know, Gronk's intelligence, knowing and seeing what the defense was showing, and Brady picking up on it too, and those guys playing together for so long. At some point, you still have to at least know defenses, whether it's because of what you've seen on the field and the look they're giving you, and or as a combination in the film room of going, oh yeah, I remember when they moved the linebackers like that and the safety comes up, this or that could happen and I got to do this.
I don't want to dismiss it. I think it can be something that adds to your value and productivity. But when you're that good, I don't think it adds that much value to your productivity if you're not watching film. One more from Manning cast yesterday. Peyton Manning with a little bit of shade to the Patriots.
I felt like the Packers were listening to Eli, you and I, our conversation on Friday about we got to come out and run the ball. I think our conversation was bugged, you know, kind of like the Patriots used to do back in the day.
Ooh, a little bitter, Peyton Manning to the Patriots. Remember, only one Super Bowl for Peyton Manning.
He also alluded to the fact that he thought every time that they played at Gillette Stadium that his locker was bugged.
Yeah.
So, hey, man, he loses
sleep over that for sure.
But it wouldn't surprise you, would it? Because the Patriots, they, you know, back to the old saying, and the Astros know this well now about if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But the Patriots tried everything, and until they got caught, and even after they got caught, they kept trying things. So it wouldn't surprise you. But the one thing that I did hear about, because I subscribe to the philosophy we talked about, which is if you're just a common fan, an average fan, you want more entertainment, you watch the Mannings. If you're a fan of one of the teams playing that night, you cannot be distracted and bogged down by all the interviews and everything the Mannings have going on when you're trying to watch every single play. So I stayed away from it. Some of my buddies watching it back home and across the country were telling me, hey, Peyton and Eli are on exactly what you're talking about. The defense sucks. They can't believe they're running it. They can't believe they're not putting more pressure. I was like, yeah, well, at least as ex-quarterbacks, they know exactly what the hell's going on, too. I hope the defensive coordinator and the head coach figure it out between now and next Sunday night, or it could be really, really ugly.
Yeah, I think Manning Cast is great for the casual observer of that game. If you're a diehard of either team that's playing in that game, I don't think that Manning Cast is for you. Coming up next, it's not Carlos Correa, but the Justin Reed contract situation is worth monitoring. Next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The State Fair in Dallas is back, and so is the annual State Fair Classic Football Game. Caller number 6 to 713-780-3776 wins a 4-pack of tickets to the State Fair Classic Football Game as the Grambling Tigers battle the Prairie View Panthers. Saturday, September 25th at the Dallas Cotton Bowl. Plus, you get a copy of the Books of Reflections, the Book of Reflections of a Legend. Caller 6, 713-780-3776. Film study is overrated. They make things way too difficult. It ain't rocket science. Eric the Dog Walker. He's on my side. If you're big and you're bad, you run real fast, you don't need to study film.
Why are you bringing that noise my way? I agreed with you, too.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the listener, as well, we do each and every day right here on the
Killer Bees. But you're trying to, like, enhance your own enhancement by saying that he's on my side.
Can I tell you the honest reason why I read that text?
Why?
Because I love the signature, Eric the Dog Walker.
Okay.
I like it. I like that he puts that there at the end. Maybe it's his business. People have business doing that.
when we used to have seven dogs in the house, I used to walk my dogs every day and people would stop and roll down the window and ask how much I charged. I'm like, they're my dogs. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, what is the going rate for a dog walker per dog?
I was curious at a certain point. Because if I could make more money doing that, I might be in.
713-780-3776, Eric the dog walker. What do you make hourly here in the city of Houston? I bet you it's pretty good, especially where you live. Not exactly Carlos Correa, but this Justin Reed contract situation is worth the watch. Maybe their best defensive player? Is that fair to say? I would have said Cunningham before the season, but he seems not to be a scheme fit. Malik Collins is good, but he's not going to be like sexy and put up the numbers and fly all over the field. I think it's fair to say Justin Reed's the best defensive player on the Texans. 713-780-3776 if you disagree.
We've talked about the fact that when you're looking for a face of the franchise that has the most value in a lot of ways, it could very well be Justin Reed in terms of a guy from a youth perspective that you're actually more focused on hanging on to as an asset as opposed to all the assets you're going to be trying to get rid of. I think Brandon Cooks is probably at the top of the list right now for teams that need offensive help and teams around the league looking at, hey, what's it going to cost me to go get a receiver that I can plug and play that still has a burst and still can go up in traffic and get the ball? So they do have some guys that could bring a return on the investment of a team making a trade and willing up to give up draft picks. It's just in order to push the price up, you're going to need more than one team interested, probably.
Well, I think the question with Justin Reed is if you bring him back, if you re-sign Justin Reed, because he's still young. I mean, this is the last year of his contract, fourth year for a pick who was in the third round, only 24 years old. I think the question now becomes, is he somebody that you want to re-sign? And I know there's a lot of people, Texans Twitter, that's out there, that they like Justin Reed, and rightfully so. Like, I love the way Justin Reed plays. He flies around, plays with a reckless abandon. And I tweeted this on Sunday when the Texans were playing. I love Justin Reed and the way he plays because of his reckless abandon. I would not re-sign Justin Reed to a contract extension because of his reckless abandon. Like, if you're re-signing a safety, and Reed's a good one, you're probably going to pay him somewhere between, what, top 10 safety money in the NFL? It's probably his range. I don't know if I do that.
He's not the Honey Badger. Early in the rebuild. He's not the kid in Seattle. So, right. You're not going to give him, you're not going to pay over the top money. But I don't know about that. I just think I'd be more apprehensive because he's been so up and down, right? I mean, they got him. They thought they got a steal of the draft. And in his first year, he looked pretty good. And then there were questions about his health. There were questions about his ability to hit. And then you're saying, with reckless abandon sometimes, he loses focus on his coverage and what he's supposed to be doing. So he's not there yet as a polished top five safety, but someone's going to give him some money. So you got to either be prepared to either put up or shut up and watch another guy go.
I think a lot of people would argue, though, that are Justin Reed fans, that the reason that he's been up and down is because of the injuries. But that's part of the equation, right?
Right.
I mean, what does Charlie say, that attendance is part of the grade? And while Reed doesn't miss a ton of games...
Charlie?
You know, CP.
Oh.
He doesn't miss tons of games, but the ailments, I think, hurt who he is as a player. And yeah, I mean, there's times whenever he's healthy that he looks really good, but do you want to pay somebody where you're always concerned whether or not he's going to suit up?
Well, but that's the other thing when we talk about Correa or anybody else. It's all part of the equation, right? I mean, yep. You could have the best skill set in the world in terms of making the calls on defense or making the right reads or being able to hit and cover and have a combination of all those things. If you can't stay on the field, you don't have enough value for me, because we just got done talking about having depth at running back could be a big thing right now for competitive teams in this league, because you used to only need one. But now, from week to week, you need two, and they need to have different skill sets. So it's tough to say that a team that needs everything right now is going to put too much money and too much stock in Justin Reed.
Adam on Twitter says, no way you pay Justin Reed. I trade him impossible for a pick. Dude is just always hurt, always dinged up. That's where I stand too. Now the question comes in, like, if we kind of find the common ground here and come to terms with that Justin Reed isn't somebody that you're going to lock up, you also don't want to let a 24-year-old top 15, top 20 safety in the league just walk for free. So it goes to what you were saying just a moment ago. Like, if you make the determination, and yeah, you probably need to decide this before the November 2nd trade deadline. Like, you're not franchise tagging Justin Reed. You don't want to pay Justin Reed, you know, the average of the top 10 salaries in the NFL at the position for one season. That's too much for Justin Reed, and it might tick off Justin Reed. Sometimes players don't like being franchise tagged. So you might have to make the decision, if you're Nick Caserio, on Justin Reed prior to November 2nd trade deadline, because you just don't want a player who's going to have some value. You could probably get a third-round pick for Justin Reed, I think, at the deadline. So that decision might have to come earlier than what they're even thinking about.
Unless you want to believe in the people that put stock in the fact that he was actually a first-round grade taken in the third round.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate
that's why I brought it up for you, Brooks Raley. Stick that one in your pie hole. But from a Justin Reed standpoint, at least you get back what you burned to get him.
Yeah.
And you could continue. You could find another Justin Reed out there in the draft, whether you get him in the third round or you get him with one of your first or second round picks, when, like you said, at this point you're taking the best player available. And maybe in a year where the quarterback market is going to be pretty bad, you spend it on some defensive players and maybe you get another Justin Reed in that regard. But there's many ways to go and get the players you need. And right now you don't want to spend a ton of money on a safety when there's so many more key positions that need to be addressed with money and or draft pick.
I would listen a little bit more to re-signing Justin Reed if this team was like projected to win the AFC South and be a playoff contender, right? Like, if you could bring him back and you're a team that thinks you're going to win the division, that makes more sense to me. But he's always hurt. He's always dinged up. I don't see him as a true foundation piece for the rebuild and for this organization going forward. 713-780-ESPN if you disagree. 713-780-3776. There's a couple of injuries that have my attention. The Texans are a little over 48 hours away from kickoff on Thursday night. Nico Collins is going to be out a few weeks. They're down a receiver. Danny Amendola also reports say that he's not expected to play on Thursday. Anthony Miller's expected to make his much-anticipated Texans debut against Carolina. I am actually excited to watch Anthony Miller play. He's quick. He was somebody who was drafted in the second round. I think he's a talented player.
At least he's not injury-prone.
He's shown flashes in Chicago. Yeah, he's injury-prone. But maybe he can stay healthy until November 7th.
But again, we hear certain things and we don't hear other things. He was a scratch last weekend, and he's out there tweeting.
I think he was a healthy scratch.
Basically, he's out there tweeting, I'm not playing, but I'm ready to go. I mean, something to that regard, that sends up another question mark. Maybe you write the question mark on the red flag, but go, what's that all about?
Well, it's him trying to help his free agency. He knows he's in the last year of a
contract. Also from an Amendola perspective, there's no one thought Amendola was going to contribute week one and also get you a touchdown.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden you didn't see anything happen go wrong and he's out.
Yeah, I didn't see him get hurt. I was wondering where that came from. He did not practice yesterday, although no one practiced yesterday. That was an estimation if they did practice. But reports today not expecting Danny Amendola to play Thursday. I don't know. He loves Papacitos, he said, which who doesn't?
Absolutely true.
Coming up next, Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, writes for SI, joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Time to talk the latest in the NFL with Sports Illustrated writer and NFL Hall of Fame voter Howard Balzer. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, writes for SI, joining the Killer Bees on our HR&P guest line. Howard, thanks for coming on. Week two, biggest surprise to you in the second week of the NFL season?
Well, that's a good question there. Biggest surprise in week two. I guess one of them is the way the Saints were handled by Carolina, which again just proves what a week-to-week league the National Football League is. But to see what they did to Green Bay in week one and then to go out and essentially not even really be in the game against the Panthers was pretty surprising. And who knows, maybe the Panthers are a lot better than many of us thought, but they didn't really dominate in week one. So that was one certainly of, you know, one of the surprises that jumps out at me.
Well, Howard, the other thing that I was saying the other day on the show was, other than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, has anybody established anything in this league? Because from week to week, a team that looks great lays an egg the following week, and you're looking at it going, will the real so-and-so team please stand up?
And I think that's the usual case when it's this time of the year, that remember, there's one fewer preseason game this year. We had a lot of teams, certainly with their main guys, don't play everybody, or not only don't play everybody, some of the guys don't play at all in some of the games. I mean, I think we had half the league starting quarterbacks didn't even play a snap in the preseason. And even those who do play from the starters, they're not playing all four quarters. And so I think normally it takes anywhere from four games, maybe almost into half the season, until you really have a sense of what teams are made of. And even then, when you think you know, there'll be a team that's looking pretty good at the halfway point and lays an egg in the second half, or a team that gets hot. But generally speaking, I think it does take several weeks for teams to come together, and especially teams offensively that have, aside from new quarterbacks, new offensive lines that they're putting together. That takes a certain amount of time to get some continuity in there. So I think all those things contribute to what we see on a week-to-week basis, and really have a hard time of figuring it all out, which is what the league wants. They don't want us to figure it out.
Howard Balzer joining the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. Howard, do you see these Dalvin Cook quotes where he thought that J.J. was trying to hurt him on that tackle for loss in the backfield?
I just saw a little bit of it, and I'm thinking, come on. I mean, what defensive player goes in and just says, okay, I'm just going to play tiddlywinks with a running back and all these things? So I don't know that J.J. Watt is that type of player. I was a little surprised to hear Cook talking about that. But hey, we also know that at the bottom of pile, sometimes when things that happen, defensive players maybe take some liberties in there. So that in a certain manner of speaking, you don't like to see that, but it's certainly the way the game's been played for a long time.
Looking at the game coming up on the short week for the Texans and the Panthers, Howard, obviously Texans have a whole lot of problem at quarterback. Yeah. And the Panthers have been one of those surprise teams that for two straight weeks have been somewhat impressive and maybe not expected as much. How big of a problem do the Texans have, obviously losing Tyrod Taylor, and your initial thoughts on a guy like Mills being the guy to come in and try and save the day?
Well, yeah, it will be a trouble, and I think the big thing is we look at Carolina and you analyze them and say, okay, here, you know, Sam Darnold, the quarterback, pretty good player. You have Christian McCaffrey, some decent receivers. The thing about them, though, is that they're pretty darn good defensively, and they haven't gotten a lot of notoriety for that. And so that means this could be a tough afternoon for the Texans if they can't get a lot going on offense. So with the Panthers playing the way they are, they certainly are going to come in and think that they can answer pretty much whatever the Texans throw at them, especially if they're playing the third round pick at quarterback.
Howard, one of the things that I look at, too, whenever you have a young quarterback taking over, and look, it's a short week. He wasn't expected to play Sunday against Cleveland. Like, you've been around the league to see this many times. How dumbed down do you think Tim Kelly has to dumb down the playbook for a rookie?
A little bit. There's no doubt about it. But let's remember also, it's not as if teams go into games with their whole playbook anyway. They put it in over the course of the off season, but then when you go into a game, you're paring it down anyway for the plays and the situations that you think will work in the game. I think what happens when you have a rookie certainly is maybe you pare it down a little more. You don't have a sense yet of what he likes and the plays that he can probably execute. And so that's one of the issues with formulating a game plan. And you don't want to put him in tough situations, which means being able to run the football. And that will be key if the Texans can do that. But I did think, though, that they hung in there pretty good with one of the better teams in the league with the Browns. So the one thing, even with the admitted little weird thing there, we're not taking a penalty by the head coach, David Culley. But overall, he does have these guys that nobody thinks much of him. And he does have these guys going out there and playing hard. And I know a lot of people will hear that and say, well, you're supposed to play hard. Well, yeah, that's true. You are supposed to. But a lot of times with bad teams, sometimes things just don't work out that way. But they're going out there and playing pretty decent football for a team that everyone thought was going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Howard, how much do you think that this opens the door for Nick Caserio to do what he probably would never admit publicly but wanted to do all along that he's been hinting about, which is not win a whole lot of games, show the city that there's some heart like you just talked about and some effort, but that at the end of the day it's better for this team to not only, you know, be as bad as possible in the win-loss column to get the draft picks, but as we were talking about, get ready for the trade deadline and say, hey, at least I can showcase some of my veteran players now so that there's going to be a market for guys like Zach Cunningham or Brandon Cooks or maybe even a Justin Reed so that he can make the rebuild go faster by stocking up on draft picks.
It's a good point, and it'll see if it plays out that way, because certainly by the trade deadline, you wouldn't think there'd be that many victories. And obviously, they're trying to build something for the future. And the more draft picks you can acquire, the better chance you have of continuing to build that roster. And I would say, for whatever reason, Brandon Cooks is a guy that seems to get shuffled around the league. And I don't understand it. The guy's a pretty darn good player. He played well for the Rams and was a big part of them going to the Super Bowl when they did. And then the Rams shipped him out. So that he could be a player that is very attractive for a good team in the NFL going down the stretch.
Howard Balzer is our guest. Howard, do you think Big Ben's done?
He's getting closer to it. I mean, that we know. I mentioned earlier about offensive lines, and I think a lot of people don't realize that this offensive line that the Steelers have has had one returning player who were starters last year. One. And they lost guys to free agency. Marquise Pouncey retired. And the guy who was coming back, Okorafor, wasn't exactly one of your household names on the offensive line. So they're trying to get that together. I think that's hamstrung them somewhat on offense and probably has been looking not as good as he might be at times. He says he feels good. He says he feels as good as he has in a long time. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt at least for a bit here to see if they can get that line together, run the ball better, which is what they hoped to accomplish when they drafted Najee Harris, which opens things up better for that passing game. And they haven't been the same passing game. Of course, Roethlisberger was hurt that one year since Antonio Brown was there. It's understandable why they shipped him off to Oakland at the time. But Juju Smith-Schuster had his best years when Antonio Brown was there. After that, he's okay, but he's just not that dynamic guy who can, he's not a number one guy. So they need help around him more, and that starts with that offensive line.
Juju needs to stay off the milk cartons and stay on the practice field.
That's very true, too.
The question as you cover the league that I have for you is about the officiating. It's now become the no fun league again with the taunting and the no celebrating and all of the kind of, we knew it was a point of contention from the preseason, but we thought the last thing they're going to do is roll it over to the regular season. But now it compounds the issue with the officials when you look at the Chargers games and other games where key calls are clearly missed when you're talking about games and how they can decide the outcome. How much of an undertone is there across the league about the officiating right now and what the league and the officials are doing on a weekly basis?
Well, it is being talked about. You're 100% right about that, which is they don't want it being talked about, obviously, but they're trying to send a message that there's certain things they won't put up with. And does that mean there might be a wrong call from now and then? Yes, it will be. Just like when they put in the emphasis on hitting the defenseless players. And there were a lot of plays that would be called and officials were told err on the side of safety. So they would call a penalty, a big one, obviously 15 yards. And then you'd watch the replay and you'd say, well, he didn't hit him in the head. That really wasn't that bad, but it's the price they pay for trying to do what they're trying to accomplish. And the whole no fun league thing, everyone's allowed to celebrate. You can do the things you want. Just don't do it in a player's face. And I will say this, that I can recall many times in past years where you'd see a guy stand over a player and point at him or get in his face and they wouldn't call anything. And you'd say, well, why aren't they calling that? That's the type of stuff that can get out of hand and they don't want that. Well, that's what they decided to clamp down on. And I think it's up to the players just to be sure when you're saying something, when you're doing something, don't do it in an opponent's face and don't make it look like there's something bad going on.
So you're saying it's Dikembe Mutombo. You can shake the finger, just don't shake it in a player's direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Howard, if you're Mike McCarthy and you're Dallas, who gives you a better chance to win, Tony Pollard or Ezekiel Elliott?
Right now it looks like Pollard. He just seems to have a little more juice than Ezekiel, and I know there was all the chatter and the narrative in the offseason. He came in the best shape of his life and all those things. They do have issues in the some issues, too, on the offensive line. But Pollard's shown himself to be a pretty good back. So I think they'll probably stay with them both. I think that Elliott still has – you would think he still has a lot of ability left in that body, but we know how it is with running backs. When they start down that, when they start the descending, it can really continue pretty quickly. Well, don't know if it's there yet for Ezekiel Elliott, but it looks like it might be on that path.
All right, gut feeling about the game coming up for the Texans this week against Carolina. Obviously, it hurts with Mills in play. That all bets are off, but Carolina's been really impressive. Is there any reason to believe that they slow up and the Texans have a chance, or is this a game that you just have to accept from a Texans perspective based on who you're putting out at quarterback that it's not. It's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an uphill battle. But the one thing you never know is on a short week, what happens with teams. And so sometimes it's good for a team that's playing well because they don't have all those extra days to be feeling good about themselves. They have to start concentrating on that next game. And so I think the Panthers will. But, you know, as we know, crazy things happen in the NFL, but it sure looks like an uphill battle. You just hope. I mean, we've had so far, what, 6 primetime games, and 4 of them have been just absolutely outstanding. Yep. And certainly what everybody is hoping for is at least it's a pretty good football game and entertaining. I don't know that anybody thought last Thursday's game would between the Giants and Washington, and it turned out to be a heck of a watch. So hopefully that's what Thursday night will be as well, and that the Texans can at least hang in there and give the Panthers all they can handle.
Well, Howard, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, writes for SI, our guest on the Killer Bees. Coming up next, we go around the NFL on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, your health is your wealth. You need to invest in yourself. And a lot of times that means that if you want to feel like you felt like in your college days or your 20s or 30s and you felt like those days are gone for good, they're not. But you got to make the effort to try and do something about it. You got to get in touch with Apollo Men's Health. They're located near downtown Houston. They got 2 locations. They got a doctor who owns the establishments, Dr. O, who's actually worked at other places. Know what works, know what didn't. Don't want to waste your time, so he only does the things that are going to be effective for his customers. That means when it comes to men and women looking to get more energy, hormone therapy is available, and they can do it with weekly visits to the clinic. They can teach you how to do it and administer it at home and get you the product. Or if you're a man and you want to do it only once every 6 months, cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy is also available. You don't have to spend as much time going to the clinic, but you get all the results. Also, if you want to get on a workout program, it starts with a full body composition analysis that really only takes a minute. You get results, and that's how you chart your progress as you continue down that road to get in better shape. Want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Quick way to get energy without hormones? B12 shots. I do one every week. They help me. They can help you too. And speaking of me, if you mention my name when you go to Apollo Men's Health and make that first visit, you're going to find out you get a free B12 shot just for listening to the station. On top of that, you're going to find out when you make that first appointment, most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. They take care of their customers. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Make that first appointment. You're going to be glad you did because they're going to take care of you. Be honest with your answers when they ask you the tough questions. They'll find your results. They'll get you a program that works. Believe me, I am living proof. They have done wonders for me. They'll do the same thing for you. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Mark Berman says that Danny Amendola is going to miss 2 to 3 weeks with a hamstring injury he suffered in Cleveland. I didn't see when he got hurt. Maybe walking up the tunnel. I mean, he's an older guy. Look, I ran 4.5 minutes yesterday, and I felt it this morning.
Hey,
so.
Maybe he was putting a little extra effort in on the next internet model.
What? Oh, okay.
Danny Amendola.
He's a married man, I thought.
I don't think so.
Is he not?
I think he's pulled some very quality inner Instagram-type models.
Yeah, but I thought he'd settled down and was married at this point. I know Edelman's kind of in that same elk. Jake Asman's with us. He'll be on with the Wheelhouse
Jake's
from 3 to 7. Jake, is this true?
That I'm not a married man or that I'll be on the Wheelhouse at 3 o'clock?
Well, no, Danny Amendola.
I think.
What do you know about his dating life?
So I met him in person once, and he was very nice.
Who's taller?
He is.
Is he?
Yes, he is. He's very much taller than me. I think he was dating Olivia Coppel.
That's true.
But I don't know when that ended, and then isn't Christian McCaffrey now dating her? So we should look into this. We might have some drama on the field Thursday night between those guys.
Yeah, and I don't think that Jeremy does enough to be able to have an open mind to looking at these situations and being able to be okay with judging his taste in women and evaluating them on a woman-by-woman basis. I mean, we've had these experiences, and Jeremy shies away from even looking at pictures of these women for a variety of reasons.
Not even for show research?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's part of doing the show.
Nope, can't do it.
Got to man up.
Won't do it. Can't coach it. Can't do it. Can't win with it.
Can't win with it.
Nope. If you're manning up and you got your Howard Balls, it's not going to hurt you.
What's coming up on the wheelhouse today,
Jake? We got a fun show. Obviously, we'll talk a lot of Texans as we get closer and closer to Thursday Night Football. I mean, the official announcement about Davis Mills starting was made earlier. I think we all knew that was coming, so we'll talk more about that. Definitely get into the Astros. We got Colleen Wolfe from the NFL Network joining us at 4:30. And Jake DeLone, former Panthers QB, is actually one of their radio analysts.
Was he not a Texan at one point?
He ended his career with the Texans in 2011. He was signed in November.
Didn't he start a playoff game?
For the Texans?
Yeah.
I don't know if he started for the Texans, but I know that his biggest game of his career was at NRG, right? When they lost to the Patriots.
Yeah, that was a game that they could have won, should have won. Jake DeLone, top three favorite Jakes for me.
Jake DeLone, there you go. Yeah,
Aspen, I like his name in or out?
Aspen's in it.
Damn right, he better be.
Who's the other Jake? Grunke? I mean, not Grunke. Jake Myers? Oh, I say Grunke.
Oh, Jake Myers, yeah, he's in it as well. I thought you were going to say Odorizzi. I was going to give you a hard no on
no,
that.
No, no, no. I think that's where my mind was going, but then
he gets the boot? Oh, never mind. He's already in one.
Hey, what's your number? What's your number, Jake? Your number on Correa. What's the most you would give Carlos Correa?
I thought you were asking him how many women he'd been with.
Well, I mean, that might be asked on a podcast. I don't know if we want to do that on the radio.
It's a good point. Well, we don't want details, Has Jake. It been asked no one on wants a podcast? To throw up while listening to the radio. We just were wondering, you know, can you count them on your fingers or you got to go to your toes?
Yeah, you know, that's a question that I don't know if I can answer. Right
okay,
now. I got to stay tuned.
You're turning as red as your beard. Go ahead, get back to the sports.
I am not. What was the question? How much would I give Correa?
DeLome didn't start a playoff game. He started, I think, week 17.
That's you
right
being
before.
Wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is your number? What is your number? What's the most you would give Correa?
I would not go more than $300 million. I wouldn't. I don't think it will take that though, because I think the Mets already have buyer's remorse with Lindor, and I don't think you're just going to give the next guy up. $300 million in
so separate case. It.
Yeah.
Maximum number of years and maximum yearly money.
If it meant keeping him, I'd pay him a 10-year deal because he's a face of the franchise player. He's your guy. I could live with him being bad at the end of the contract if you could win another championship with him being your shortstop.
See, I
think you can win a championship next year with him not being your shortstop.
Yeah,
I agree.
I feel like speaking from a fan's perspective on it, though, he's your guy. Like, you already watched Springer walk in free agency, Cole walked in free agency. It'd be nice to be able to spend big money and keep one of your own. You drafted him first overall. He was here as you started to get good and now become a great team. I think there's something to keeping that guy. Now, if they let him go, I get it, but then they better take that money they were going to spend into Correa and spend it in a bunch of different areas on this team so they could keep the window open for as long as possible.
You know what's nice? Winning is nice. And I think that the way to sustain winning for this franchise is not re-signing Carlos Correa. So you said 10 years, but you wouldn't give $300 million.
Yeah,
so what's he
most.
Making annual salary, like 25?
Yeah, if you could get him at that. I mean, I want to see what the market actually is.
There's going to be a bidding war, and you know it. There's going to be too many big market teams that have a bag of cash waiting to spend.
There's a lot of shortstops, though. That's the thing.
There are. But he's got to be sitting at top of the list based on the performance this year. Sure. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of teams that get buyer remorse because they get enamored by the one season where he bet on himself. And right now he's winning. But how many of those pay off in years 9 and 10, maybe even 8, 9, and 10?
I also think it's a difficult question to ask right now because I want to see, well, how much money do they have to spend overall this offseason? Like, if you tell me you can only bring Correa back and that's it, I have to think about that because I think this team has other needs if they want to keep this window open here. So it's complicated. I feel like it depends on the price, but if it's, you know, if you got to go 10 to keep him, I think he's the guy you do pay because he's one of your own.
Better chance to be a Yankee or an Astro.
I would say Astro. I don't think the Yankees are going to be in on Correa.
See, you keep saying no, and I keep saying yes. And the more I see their infielders defensively, I think that they're, no matter how much they still have to pay the other guys on their roster, that's a spot that looks like it makes perfect sense.
I think it's more likely they pay Trevor Story than Correa. They were linked to Story at the trade deadline. That almost fell through, and then they made the Anthony Rizzo trade right after. So, I don't know. I mean, look, if the Yankees are a major market team, they have money to spend. I just think they might spend it on a different shortstop besides Correa.
Siri making this playoff roster?
How could he not, right? How could he not?
Because Dusty plays hunches and favorites and security blankets, and he sure does like Marwin Gonzalez.
He does, and Marwin, look, props to him. Big hit last night.
After the game was decided, but yeah, he got his.
Against a mop-up pitcher.
I mean, you got to give him credit. He's everyone said, you know, he's not going to play. What does it mean? And he's produced when he's had the opportunity. I think Sirius should be on the roster. What he brings from a speed standpoint,
I said a lot of versatility, and because the way it started out was when you signed or acquired Aledmys Diaz, he was a poor man's Marwin. Now Marwin's a poor man's Diaz, and in the process, you already got the guy that does what Marwin does, and by adding Siri, he's got the versatility. Pinch runner, defensive outfielder, could hit foot pop, can play multiple
great
positions.
Name.
Okay, and throw that in as well. But I mean, I think that he brings too much. That means you are, it's repetitive if you keep Marwin.
I tend to agree with you, Joel. I mean, it's a nice problem to have though if you're the Astros. Yeah. Like you have legitimate competition for spot number 26 on your playoff roster. That means you're a pretty damn good team.
Jake, what's going on with Cody getting stuck in the bathroom?
Did you see this video?
I saw the video. Cody got unlocked out of a bathroom. He was trapped in a Bucky's bathroom, which, I mean, it's a good bathroom.
He couldn't look guiltier when he got out, too.
He didn't thank the guy.
He didn't thank the guy. We made the guy on our show the Bucky's bathroom bro, as we referred to him as.
Good
champ
alliteration.
Of the day on the program.
Yeah.
Because this guy rescued Cody after he was stuck for 15-plus minutes in a Bucky's bathroom stall at the Baytown Bucky's as we're coming back from Beaumont. And Cody doesn't even thank the guy for helping him get out of this bathroom stall. I mean, this poor guy took time out of his busy Bucky's schedule, had to take out a screwdriver just to like fix part of the door that was stuck and then not letting Cody come out. And Cody doesn't even thank the poor guy.
Can we be honest with the fact that Cody could have solved the problem himself? I mean, when push comes to shove and he actually pushed and shoved, he should be able to get that door open.
Yeah, I don't know what the issue was. I would tend to agree with you. Like, what was keeping him stuck?
In fairness to him, it was pretty – like, I saw him, punching the door, knocking on it, trying to move it. It was not going to move unless I got the help of him.
I mean, he's not Aaron Donald, but I mean, I would assume that he's got a little bit more oomph in him if he had to.
I believe he tried. I mean, he was in there for like 15 minutes, and it took a lot of time.
Cody doesn't want to piss anybody off. I could see Cody going, I could knock this thing down, but then I might have to pay for it, and they might get offended. I'm not doing that.
You got to thank the guy, though, that helps you get out of the bathroom stall.
Yeah, and don't thank the guy that filmed it if he works for another station in town. Get over yourself from that regard, too. I want to make sure that's known, because one of the follow-up tweets was from someone at a different station going, you didn't even give me the credit, and I shot it. Well, you know what? Not on our air.
Well, I thought you shot it. That wasn't you that shot it?
No, I shot the video. That was my video.
Yeah.
Well, someone at another station.
Right here.
Yeah, someone that you used to work with, someone at another station who was trying to say he shot it, and he didn't get credit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that at all. I don't think that's what happened. I mean, check the mentions again. I think the host you're referring to at another station was pointing out the fact that he didn't say thank you.
This one's going to be under review. We'll let you know tomorrow. Yeah, we'll go to the tape. We'll be under review tomorrow.
Let a bit be a bit. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But you know what? You don't need to be that thirsty for attention.
I would agree with that. All right.
He helped a bit. He pointed out that Cody didn't say thank you. I'll defend him there. It was a good
Are you interviewing or are you good where you're at?
I feel great.
Good. We're Team Gal.
All right.
It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. The Wheelhouse is next. Jake Asman, Brad Kellner, Cody Stutes. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.